Hello and welcome to Inman and Dan's Monday Blues podcast. This week we're looking at women in blues music. It's quite easy to forget that they were actually the first to popularise the blues, the first big stars, and I suppose you could even say celebrities.
Yeah, it seems a good time to do an episode on them, seeing as it was International Women's Day last week. But also I just happened to watch a film as well called Bessie, which was on HBO last year, and it's about the life of Bessie Smith, who, as you say, was probably one of the biggest stars at the time in the early 20th century. And there's some surprising scenes in the film that seem quite shocking.
Is it not a bit like Sensationalist?
Yeah, I think they did take a bit of artistic license, but she did have a lot of tumultuous relationships with both men and women, and there are some quite shocking bits. For example, at the beginning of her career, when she's auditioning for other people's travelling shows, they do what's called a bag test, where they held up a paper bag next to her face, and if her skin was darker than the paper bag, then she wasn't allowed in the travelling show. This one we're going to play sort of sums up some of her problems she had with alcohol, and it's called Give Me a Pigfoot and a Bottle of Beer.
Give me a pigfoot and a bottle of beer. Send me Gates, I don't care. I feel just like I wanna clear. Give the piano player a drink because he's bringing me down. He's got a rhythm, yeah. When he stomps his feet, he sends me right off to sleep. Check all your razors and your guns. Do the shim, shim, shimmy, tell the rising sun. Give me a reaper and a gang of gin.
So that was Bessie Smith with Give Me a Pigfoot and a Bottle of Beer. Like a lot of other artists, I think her career sort of fizzled out during the Great Depression, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she actually ended up basically losing everything. She had this stormy relationship with her husband, who ended up taking their adopted son, and she never saw them again. And she started having to earn money by singing dirty songs in sort of seedy bars. And it was during one of these performances when John Hammond came up to her. He wanted her to play in his Spirituals to Swing concert in 1938, but she died the year before in a car accident.
Yeah, but our next artist, Ma Rainey, had a big impact on Bessie Smith's career because she actually began as a backing singer for Ma Rainey.
Yeah, Ma Rainey was about 10 years older than Bessie, and so by the time Bessie Smith started up, Ma Rainey was one of the biggest stars on the blues circuit. She started off touring in the Rabbit Foot Minstrels, who also included Ida Cox, was another artist we played a few weeks back, and then became famous in her own right, toured her own show. As you said, Bessie Smith became one of her singers, and then basically they fell out when Bessie Smith outgrew her and became more famous. But Ma Rainey in this time continued to be a successful recording artist in the 20s. She recorded for Paramount in Chicago and even recorded with Louis Armstrong as part of her backing band. As I said before, she was bisexual, which at the time made her even more of an outsider on top of being a woman and black. But she was also very strong-willed and liked playing with and challenging her audiences about this. You can see that in this song, Prove It On Me Blues.
When out last night with a crowd of my friends, there must have been women, cause I don't like no men. It's true, I wear color and a tie, make the wind blow all the while. But to say I do it, ain't nobody called me. They sure got to prove it on me.
Ma Rainey with Prove It On Me Blues. But up next, we've got someone who was less famous at the time.
Yeah, we've got Victoria Spivey. She's perhaps not as well known as the other artists that were played today, but she was born in Houston, Texas in 1906 to a musical family. She played in the family string band until her dad died, and I think she was only 7 at the time, but she learnt to play by herself, playing local parties. As she got older, she played in local bars, nightclubs and flats, normally alone but sometimes with singer guitarists like Blind Lemon Jefferson and Lonnie Johnson. And it was with Lonnie Johnson that she recorded a few songs for OK Records in 1927, including one of her most well-known songs, Dopehead Blues. She was quite theatrical, and she played in musicals and stage shows as well after her career took a nosedive in the Depression like these other artists. But she retired and played in a church choir until the folk revival of the 1960s.
Yeah, didn't she go on tour on the American Folk Blues Festival tour in Europe?
Yeah, she did. And even after that, she actually launched a low-budget label to record blues and related music called Spivey Records. And she even recorded a few songs with Big Joe Williams, who we played, I think, in Series 1 of our podcasts. and also an unknown man called Bob Dylan on harmonica. But the song we're going to play is called Organ Grinder Blues, and it's in honour of one of our favourite pubs in Nottingham.
Organ Grinder. Organ Grinder. Organ Grinder. Play that melody. Take your gill and grind some more for me.
That was Victorious BV with Organ Grinder Blues.
What a cracking pub.
Brilliant pub.
What have we got next then?
We've got Elizabeth Cotton, who's a totally different style to what we've heard up to now. She basically invented her own unique style, and it's called cotton picking. Because she was left-handed, but she played a right-handed guitar, she flipped it over so the bass strings were at the bottom. But she married young and ended up giving up playing. And it was years later, once she got divorced, her daughter was growing up, she was working in a department store when she found a little girl who had lost her mother. So she returned the girl to her mum, who turned out to be Ruth Crawford Seeger, who was a composer and part of the Seeger family, who were very important in promoting blues music at the time.
Yeah, we've obviously talked quite a lot about the Lomaxes and Hammonds, but the Seeger family, as you said, are very important in blues music, getting it out to wider audiences.
Yeah, especially Ruth's husband Charles Seeger, who's a musicologist or ethnomusicologist, and his son from his first marriage was folk singer Pete Seeger, who's obviously famous in his own right. Anyway, Elizabeth Cotton ended up becoming a maid and a nanny at their household. And it was about 5 years into her time with them that they discovered her playing guitar, and they started recording her straight away. And then she became a regular part of the folk blues revival of the 1960s, by which time she was in her 60s as well, and continued playing until her death at age 92. And we'll put a link to the video of her playing this song, her most famous song, in the description below. It's well worth watching because it's quite an amazing style that she has. This is a song that she wrote in her early teens, Freight Train.
Freight train, run so fast. Freight train, run so fast. Please don't tell what train.
That was Elizabeth Cotton with Freight Train.
Yeah, so as we mentioned earlier, the Great Depression and sort of early 30s was the end of women as the biggest stars in black music. And it wasn't until the 1960s with the emergence of artists such as Aretha Franklin and this artist, Etta James, when women sort of came out of the shadow of male artists again.
Yeah, absolutely. Etta James was born in 1938 to a 14-year-old mother, and her father was never known. She had quite a difficult upbringing. She was brought up by foster parents and her mum was frequently absent. But it was in the 1950s when she went back to her mother's care that she actually got into doo-wop and blues. And it was through a chance meeting with Johnny Otis, a blues artist. And he basically took her and her girl group called the Creolettes under his wing and got them recorded. It wasn't until 1960 that she left the Creolettes and she signed a deal with Chess Records. Under the management of Leonard Chess, she became quite a big star because he saw potential for the pop charts, and he surrounded her recordings with violins and other string instruments to give it a more mainstream appeal. But her debut album, At Last, in 1960, had jazz standards, blues numbers, doo-wop, and even early rhythm and blues as well. And it was during this period that she recorded some of her most famous songs. But there's been like recent renewed interest in her after Beyoncé played her in the film Cadillac Records, released in 2008, and also The Obituaries after her death recently in 2012.
So as always, links to all the songs are in the description below.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And to play us out, we've got Etta James with I'd Rather Go Blind.